This is ensemble member Martha Levy, and you're listening to the Steppenwolf Theatre Company podcast.
I'm Associate Artistic Director David New, and I'm here with Michael Patrick Thornton, who is the director of the Steppenwolf for Young Adults production of Mice and Men. How are you, Michael?
I'm good, David. Thank you.
Good. So, Michael, this is an adaptation, of course, of the novel of Mice and Men by John Steinbeck. And this is your first time directing at Steppenwolf, although your experience at Steppenwolf goes all the way back to when you were a teenager.
It does, yes.
And it begins out in the house.
It does. It begins a house right of the balcony. I had come through, I think it was Arts Exchange at that point, when I was in high school, maybe eighth grade, to come see a production of 12 Angry Jurors, which ensemble member Bob Brewer directed. And it really was a transformative event in my life insofar as, like, I'm from the northwest side of Chicago, and my theater, my high school didn't have a theater program. So our only access to theater was getting bused to Steppenwolf for Shakespeare Rep. And I just remember sitting in the balcony and, I mean, really, like, as I say, like, white-knuckling it, watching this show, which was multi, was different genders, different races, and it was fascinating. I was just blown away by it, and I felt like, I never felt like I really fit in anywhere, you know, in school. And I felt like watching that show, I was like, I know I need to be here. I need to be around this somehow, you know. And I remember just after the show, just everyone had taken their respective buses home and just kind of walking around and really blown away by the production. And, you know, years later then, got called in to do reading of The Elephant Man, which was last season at SYA, and was lucky enough to act on that stage. And so after that, I spent my time directing and teaching as well at Second City, and I had started off in Chicago doing morning Shakespeare for students. And I talked to Hallie Gordon, artistic director of SYA, and said, look, if you're ever looking for directors, I really believe strongly in this program. And I think it's crucial and important because the large majority of the audience are at a critical and formative stage in their development. And please keep me in mind. So we talked about different projects. Julius Caesar came up, and then Mice and Men somehow came across our path. And here we are, one day left, 10 hours out of 12, our tech rehearsal on Monday. And it's in great shape, and thankfully, the import of directing this play at this theater and all those kind of egoic worries and concerns luckily has not hit me and will probably hit me 2 weeks from now after it opens. And I, anytime an immediately kind of palpable awareness of, oh my God, this play and directing Bob Brewer, who directed 12 Angry Jurors that I saw as a student, and now I'm directing him. It's wonderfully bizarre, you know. I remember I was just lucky enough to be promoted to an assistant director through the grace of Anna Shapiro for August Osage County. And I remember she was trying to give a note to two ensemble members who will remain nameless, and she turned to me, and it was this wonderful private moment. She said, I have to go give a note to two actors I've grown up idolizing. Here I go. I have no idea I'm going to do this. And I often feel that way directing this play because after the Steppenwolf experience I had immediately, I researched the company. And, of course, it brought me to the movie with Gary Sinise and John Malkovich. And so it's been kind of a decluttering of the ghosts of what they've done just so I can go to work and do my job. And luckily, that was able to happen day one, you know. Yeah. And it's a beautiful, beautiful work of art. It really is, and the cast is incredible.
But I love that, you know, the image of Bob Brewer being out in the house directing that production of 12 Angry Jurors, you out in the house observing that. Then you're on the stage in The Elephant Man, and now you return to the house, but it's not as an audience member, it's as a director, and this shifting perspective on the frame, right, that the story is told within.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that you're modest in talking about the idea of working at Steppenwolf, but I'm sure that the heartfelt reaction that you had to that initial experience probably drives you through the importance of these stories mm-hmm. reaching our young adult audiences, and that, I mean, it sort of takes the pressure off a bit, doesn't it? Because you think these are important stories to tell?
I do, yeah. And I think what Steinbeck's saying a lot is that in times of fear, love trumps fear, you know, and that companionship trumps fearful, individualism. And I think, the story of how circuitous my path has been, it's almost like a Lifetime movie or something. If you wrote it, people like, no, that's not true, you know. I think there is a great irony in it that, you know, before I became sick and kind of had to spend 2 years in, you know, physical and speech therapy, you know, I think before that, the kind of artist I was someone who maybe would fall in the category of that Stanislavski quote of like, be in love with the art in yourself and not yourself in the art.
Mm-hmm.
And I think as a 22-year-old, you know, equity actor, things going great, I didn't really know how to handle that kind of success. And I think it was definitely more of kind of a self-awareness, very goal-oriented, driven pursuit. And I didn't get to work at Steppenwolf during those years. And then I got sick and had this kind of, you know, somewhat transformative and ever-perplexing thing happen. And I feel like I'm on the other side of the Stanislavski quote now, that I'm in love with the art in myself and in through the human beings I get to work with and the audiences who show up and watch the show, and especially students. And I feel like it seems kind of that it's no mistake that only when I was at that point in my life was I then able to work at Steppenwolf twice, you know, in so many years, you know. So it just seems like when the student is ready, the teacher will appear kind of a Zen koan or something, you know. It's a blessing, and I do. It is a labor of love, and it's from the morning I get up to the morning I go to bed, it's just been Steinbeck and Mice and Men and what these characters are protecting, because they're all so scared, and for such an amount of talking they're not risking very much, you know, initially, and then they decide to dare themselves and to dream big. So it fits in just wonderfully with the season of the imagination.
Yeah, I was struck by two things when I got to see the run through in the rehearsal hall that were so clarion, I thought, in the storytelling. And one is that this is a world in which people travel individually, and that the ability to reinvent oneself at a new location, landing in a new place, is really a new beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that implies, right, that there is a past that you may not want to be attached to.
Of course.
And then the second thing as well was how in that world family is formed, you know, right. Or we
Absolutely.
Might even say ensemble, right, at this theater.
Right.
But from disparate and surprising individuals come a group that is stronger together than they are individually.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, absolutely. You know, the first point you raised of the kind of the necessary construct of continual reinvention of the self, you know, as a survival mechanism. You know, Slim says in the play about the only thing a man has private is where he's come from and where he's going, you know. And the danger, of course, in that is if you reinvent yourself from place to place in order to forget the past, ironically, you're just dominated by the past, you know, and you end up with nobody. The only thing the proud man has left to ultimately be proud of is his solitude, right? And at the end of the day, you're just left alone. Ironically, you think it's going to protect you, but all it does is isolate you. And as far as the family thing you brought up, it's so funny because this morning going over my notes, I had Mike, do not forget, look at staging in terms of de facto familial roles. And I'm certainly haven't talked to the cast too much about this, so maybe they'll learn about this on the podcast. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the blocking and a lot of the relationships are thought in terms of parent, child, uncle, nephew, grandfather, grandson. And there's certainly no relations, you know, besides the boss and his son, you know. But I think we do that. I think just a human animal that we're not meant to go through life alone, you know. And I think we create patterns and we create familial constructs when there are none.
You know, there was an article, just to digress slightly about this, because it was interesting hearing you talk about, you know, well, what happens when you are negotiating, forgetting or letting go of the past? Mm. There's an article about, you know, our audience for this production with technology, you know, with Facebook, there is a constant record. And the writer was saying, you know, as a young adult and college student and then young professional, each time she moved to a new city, it felt in a way that there was a new chance to not entirely reinvent herself or leave behind, but, you know, the record that she wished to let go and no longer be reminded of could disappear. And it's interesting the way that young people now are curating their story and recording it, you know. Mm-hmm. It'd be very interesting to see how that generation grows up, you know?
Yeah, I am. I'm a little concerned about this generation coming up insofar as I think we're being taught that what we're doing at every single second is of vital interest to hundreds of people, and it certainly isn't, you know. It's just a perverse curiosity at best, you know. And I don't think... there needs to be some study about the long-term effects of writing about yourself on a daily basis in the third person, because I think what it does is it does create a separation of true self and these other things like name and what you do and, you know, where you go to school and who you are, that these things are getting mixed up with the idea of identity, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's not who you are, you know. And you know, for me, it took a personality like mine, like a cataclysmic kind of derailment, to really start thinking about issues of identity and what we are. And I do worry about this technology. And I wrote in my blog about friends are now just made with a click of the mouse, and there's no time put in.
Yeah,
you know, time has been collapsed so much that we say nice talking to you when we're Facebook chatting with somebody, and it's not. And there's an intrinsic nurturing that I think we get out of face to face or touch that's irreplaceable. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think it's creating it's changing the connotation, the definition of friendship, and I worry about it. So in our production, time is honored through different tempos, and there's very slow tempos in the play. It's very fast, aggressive tempos, and I think the artist's responsibility these days is to push the attention span a bit.
Michael, great talking to you. We can't wait to see the play in full bloom with all of the tech elements on the stage and our audiences in school audiences during the week, and then public performances on the weekend. I know it's going to be a powerful story and one, as you've, you know, referenced, very timely.
Absolutely. It's a huge heart, and I can't wait to get it open.
Great. If you'd like to get more information about the Steppenwolf for Young Adults production of Mice and Men, you can visit the Steppenwolf website at www.steppenwolf.org.
AT&T is the sponsor of online content at steppenwolf.org.